The synthetic opioid fentanyl is the leading cause of death for Americans aged 18 to 49, according to a Washington Post analysis. The Wisconsin Department of Health Services said that in 2021, more than 1,000 people died of a fentanyl overdose, a 97% increase from 2019. The U.S. government is working to end the threat of the fentanyl crisis, but a new investigative series finds missteps along the way from multiple presidential administrations. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Have you encountered fentanyl in your life? Yourself, someone in your family, or are you a first responder, a healthcare provider? What are you seeing in your community? Do you have questions about how this drug, the synthetic drug, rose so quickly to become such a big problem? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@WPR.org. Nick Miroff covers the Department of Homeland Security as a reporter for The Washington Post. He and his colleagues are in the midst of a multi-part series on the rise of the fentanyl problem. Nick, welcome back to Central Time.
Thanks. Glad to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
I mentioned just one statistic there. Can you talk about what a dominant force fentanyl has become when it comes to overdoses here in the United States?
Yeah, I mean, it's really staggering. Last year, more than 107,000 Americans died of drug overdoses. About two-thirds of those were caused by fentanyl. That is the highest figure ever. And as you mentioned, fentanyl is now the leading cause of death for Americans 18 to 49. It kills more people in the United States each year than suicides, gun violence, and even car accidents. It's just an incredible, wave of death that has risen extremely quickly. And one of the things we found in the course of reporting this series is that, during the pandemic, these numbers got significantly worse. Just since 2019, fatal overdoses from fentanyl in the United States are up 94%. It's a lot to unpack. But I think, the scope of this thing and the magnitude of the losses were the thing that really inspired us to want to dig into this and, try to bring more attention to it.
What is it about fentanyl? Now, it was originally invented, I've talked about this on the show before, as something that you might use post-surgically that had a legitimate use. What is it, since it's been replicated illegally in so many cases now, what is it about its concentration, its nature, its portability that's made it such a lucrative drug for the illegal industry?
Sure. No, I mean, you're absolutely right. It still has legitimate medical purposes. It was created as a very, powerful painkiller. It's still used in a medical context under, controlled circumstances. Some people have probably heard of fentanyl patches that release the drug very slowly. So for people with terminal illnesses, it can be, really important treatment. What we're talking about is illegal fentanyl manufactured by Mexican drug trafficking organizations. And, to tell this story, you got to look back to the first wave of opioid addiction in the United States that many of your listeners will be familiar with, really driven by the U.S. opioid industry, Purdue Pharma, OxyContin. I think a lot of people know this story. And when the DEA and other U.S. law enforcement cracked down on those companies and manufacturers, it created a big vacuum in the market. And people initially turned to heroin that was being trafficked by Mexican cartels, but the cartels quickly figured out that they could manufacture legal fentanyl. It's cheaper. They don't need to control huge tracts of land. They don't need to have farmers growing opium poppies. They don't need to worry about the seasons. With the right chemicals and someone who knows how to make it in a makeshift lab, you can create huge quantities of this stuff. And so the price for street level fentanyl has just gone way, way down. And now on the streets of cities like San Diego, where we set our first story, you can buy a fake oxycodone pill that's really a fentanyl pill manufactured by Mexican cartels. Those pills sell for $4 or $5 a hit. So the cost of addiction has gone way down, even as the potency of these drugs has grown and far, far more people are now addicted.
One running theme and one of your pieces in this series is Washington, the DEA, presidential administrations always being a step behind this, it seemed like. By the time, as you mentioned, it moved on to heroin, we're still looking at prescription drugs. We're looking at heroin, now fentanyl's coming from China. We're looking at China, now it's coming, as it is today, from Mexico. Can you talk a little bit about why it seems like the response has been behind the curve?
Yeah, I mean, on the one hand, I think it'd be really easy to say, oh, the Mexican cartels are really, you know, inventive and resourceful and difficult to defeat. And so I think a lot of people have been accustomed to thinking about this as just this kind of, you know, misfortune that has, you know, occurred in the United States. But what we've tried to do is go back and look at, you know, what were the missteps and mistakes that led up to this. And, you know, it goes back over multiple administrations. And, you know, the Obama administration, you know, initially viewed fentanyl as, you know, less of a threat than heroin. They treated it basically as this kind of, you know, additive that would be used to enhance heroin. This was a time when they demoted the drug czar's position and were generally getting away from, you know, some of the more law enforcement heavy responses. And then, you know, during the Trump administration, we saw, you know, the Department of Homeland Security channeling $11 billion into building a border wall. But, you know, what we know now is that the border wall is virtually useless for stopping fentanyl trafficking, because the vast majority of this illegal fentanyl that's coming into the country is arriving in passenger vehicles and commercial trucks. It's going right through the official ports of entry, hidden by smugglers inside these vehicles. It's not being carried by migrants through the desert or anything like that. And so what we're seeing right now on the border is just vast quantities being seized almost every day. Millions of pills, they call them blues. They're these blue fake oxycodone tablets that the cartels are just cranking out on this industrial scale and sending across the border. And if a percentage of them gets confiscated by U.S. Customs and Border Protection, well, they just sort of shrug that off as the cost of doing business. So as the drugs, you know, are flooding into the country, the price is going down. And, you know, there's very little hope right now that, you know, that we're on the verge of turning any kind of corner. And so I think, you know, most of the people we talked to for this series feel like this problem is going to continue to get worse until, you know, maybe it gets better.
Talking to Nick Miroff from The Washington Post. He and his colleagues are in the midst of a multi-part series on the rise of fentanyl and fentanyl overdoses in the United States. You can join in at 800-642-1234. If this is affecting your life, you, a family member, a loved one, if you are a healthcare provider or work as in a police department, as a first responder, love to hear what you are seeing. 800-642-1234 is the number. That's 800-642-1234. Let's go to your calls. Steve joins us now in Wisconsin Rapids. Steve, hi.
Hello, I'm a trucker, and I've been all over this country, and I'm telling you the reality of the situation. They're bringing it across the state border due to this open door policy. Not only is it coming in trucks and vehicles, but it's being moved throughout the United States by truckers. We have so many foreigners driving trucks that don't even speak English. They're dangerous. I mean, I'm a trucker. We used to have to worry about 4x4 or 4-wheelers. Now we got to worry about these 18-wheelers because they're dangerous. The government let them get CDLs. They're moving drugs across the country, and the FBI ain't stopping them.
Steve, I gotcha. Thanks for the call. Nick, what do we know? You were just starting to talk about how drugs are actually crossing the border at legal ports of entry. What do we know about how they're coming into the country and then making their way from places like San Diego to places like Wisconsin?
Yeah, well, the vast majority of the illegal fentanyl is coming through those official crossings in the San Diego area and in southern Arizona, namely Nogales. They come across and then they go to stash houses in Los Angeles and Phoenix and Las Vegas, where cartel transportation cells essentially divide them up and bring them to wholesalers, distribute them to wholesalers across the country. And you're probably saying this sounds like, you know, the way that any industry would handle distribution. And that's right. I mean, these cartels are essentially dark, you know, evil pharmaceutical companies that are operating many of in very similar fashion. And so once they bring the product to those to cities around the United States, then wholesalers will sell them to, you know, more retail level dealers. And that's how fentanyl gets, you know, distributed down to the street level. But I'll give you one incredible fact that we learned in the course of investigating this series. You know, right now, for example, in Arizona, the price of a single fentanyl tablet, you know, the one that I just said costs, you know, $4 or $5 on the street. Well, the wholesale price in Arizona is down to about 50 cents per tablet. And that's a lethal dose of fentanyl to someone who doesn't have an opioid habit or tolerance. That's how cheap it is.
Looking at prevention efforts, we had cooperation for a while between the Drug Enforcement Agency, you write, and the Mexican government. The current Mexican president, López Obrador, put an end to a lot of that, saying, hey, violence has been going up in Mexico since we started this. The fentanyl problem in the U.S. has been going up, too. It's not working. What's the current state of cooperation between the U.S. and Mexico?
Yeah, this is a really key part of the whole story. Basically, you know, the U.S.-Mexico drug war partnership fell apart in late 2018, right as fentanyl was taking off. And that has been, you know, one more factor driving this explosion of fatal overdoses. But, you know, for about 10 years, the United States and Mexico worked closer than ever together under this thing called the Merida Initiative that some of your listeners will remember. And that involved, you know, U.S. intelligence, not only the DEA, but, you know, other U.S. agencies working closely with Mexico's armed forces to really go after the cartels and take down drug bosses like, you know, El Chapo Guzman. And so, you know, this partnership was essentially the framework for a decade. It was highly flawed. And when Andrés Manuel López Obrador, the current president of Mexico, he was running for office in 2018, he basically, you know, rejected this agreement and ran on, you know, the idea. One of the ideas was that, you know, that this way of fighting the drug war was not working. It wasn't bringing down violence and it wasn't really doing anything to bring down drug use. And he was, you know, on that front, he was correct. But by going in a different direction right at this moment, it put a rift into the cooperation between the two countries. It gave the cartels an advantage. And if you talk to DEA agents today, they will say that that was a major setback to U.S. operations. And that has also, you know, been one of the factors that has them, you know, trying to play catch up to get, you know, back ahead of this thing.
We're talking to Washington Post reporter Nick Miroff about an investigative series on the rise of the fentanyl crisis. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Are you seeing this problem in your own community, in your own family, workplace? Call 800-642-1234. Do you have questions about the economics of fentanyl, how it's made, how it ends up in the United States? 800-642-1234 is the number. We'll continue the conversation coming up here on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Barrett. We're picking up our conversation with Nick Miroff, Washington Post reporter, looking at a post-investigative series on the rise of the fentanyl crisis in the U.S. You can join in at 800-642-1234 to share your own experiences, your questions, 800-642-1234, or email ideas at WPR.org. Back to your calls now. Martha is with us in Menominee. Martha, hi.
Hey, Rob. Another great show. Thanks so much. Say, I'd really like to thank your host for dispelling the myth that migrants and refugee seekers and asylum seekers are walking across the border carrying these drugs. Your host has shown that that's not the case. They're coming in through border crossings in trucks. So my question is, how bad this fentanyl epidemic, how much of this can be traced back to people desperate for pain relief that can't get, you know, opioids through their regular doctors, because that system seemed to have gotten shut down. So I'm just curious about that, if there are any numbers, you know, that can go back to that.
Martha, thanks for the call. Nick, I remember conversations on the show when we were getting more heroin, as you mentioned, and part of the story there was people who had been using pain relievers, often prescribed by doctors, that's cut off, and then they turn to something like heroin. Is that still part of the story now with fentanyl?
Yeah, that is absolutely part of the story. I mean, the same wave of addiction preceded fentanyl, and what we've seen is that fentanyl has almost entirely replaced heroin in the illegal narcotics market. It's in some cities you can't even find fentanyl anymore, And, you know, initially, whereas some users were wanting heroin and then getting introduced to fentanyl, now what we're told is that people who are, you know, habitual opioid users are just seeking out fentanyl because it's so much more potent. But your caller is absolutely right. I mean, the origins of this go back to the prescription opioids epidemic. You know, a lot of people were left needing, you know, these narcotics in order to avoid withdrawal symptoms. They turned to heroin and now they've turned to fentanyl. But I'll just make one more point, which is that another thing we've seen is that supply creates its own demand. You know, I think it's a lot of people easily dismiss this as a matter of a demand for narcotics in the United States and that the cartels are satisfying. But one of the things that, you know, we've seen, you look at this, is that a huge abundance of supply and drugs being so cheap and dealers using fentanyl to enhance the potency of other things like methamphetamines, cocaine, other drugs that people are buying in the market, all of that grows the potential pool of customers for these trafficking organizations. And that's one of the main reasons we've seen the number of people using drugs and dying now from fentanyl increase.
Martha, thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. Mike joins us next in Madison. Mike, hello.
Hi. So about 10 years ago, researchers down in Chile were looking into a vaccine for alcohol where you could give a shot and 6 months of results, you wouldn't want to drink any alcohol. I heard they're working on a vaccine possibly for fentanyl. I don't know if that would also include heroin, but it might be something that you would consider as a parent having your children vaccinated. Have you any information on that?
Thanks for the call, Mike. Nick, have you encountered anything like that in your reporting?
You know, only the coverage that we've read. I know that this is something that they're working on, but from what I understand and from what you know, we're told, this is the kind of thing that isn't close to being ready to, you know, to roll out. I think it's still in the experimental phase. But I think that, you know, public health agencies as well as the community, medical community, would welcome something like this, would welcome any intervention that holds the promise that you know, carries the possibility of being able to break the cycle of addiction that so many people are gripped with.
Thanks for the call, Mike. Nick, as we've mentioned, this is a problem that rose over the course of various presidential administrations, Democrats and Republicans. What are you seeing in the latest efforts now from the Biden administrations when it comes to fentanyl?
Well, one thing we've seen is that is a renewed focus from the DEA under the Biden administration. You know, prior to the current DEA administrator, Ann Milgram, getting in there, getting confirmed by the Senate last year, the DEA went through a series of temporary acting leaders. They had, you know, between 2015 and 2021, there were five different agency heads. That's one of the things that led to the kind of sense of turmoil at the agency. All of this occurring while fentanyl was really taking off. So we've seen the Biden administration really renew its focus or put its focus on fentanyl. It's got a campaign called One Pill Can Kill. And Administrator Milgram talks about, you know, the agency's efforts to really target the two top Mexican drug trafficking organizations, the Sinaloa cartel and the Jalisco cartel, to target them and their financial networks abroad. So I think you're seeing more of a law enforcement effort and you know, there's a new push for more treatment funding and any number of other interventions aimed at trying to both discourage people from using fentanyl or experimenting with fentanyl, but also providing treatment for people who are addicted. I think the message is getting through, and I do think there is, you know, a bipartisan momentum that we've seen for more action as people start to, you know, realize just how massive this wave of fatal overdoses is.
And when it comes to border enforcement now, as you mentioned, port of entries, people are driving a vehicle in, smuggling this. Not many vehicles get searched. Cartels are willing to accept a certain amount of loss. Are there efforts to step up how many vehicles get screened or use technology to do it more efficiently?
There is. There's an effort underway to increase scanning technology and both in sophistication and in the percentage of vehicles that get scanned. CBP just in the past year has added some of this new equipment at several of the major ports, but it's going to take several years, and the effort is behind. I mean, as one congressional staffer we spoke to talked about, even back in 2018, there was a recognition that the U.S. government needed what she called a Manhattan Project to try to confront the severity of this threat. And it's really only in the last year or so that we've started to see these new scanning systems come online, and it's going to take many more years. And, right now we're right in the middle of this crisis, and this is the equipment that's badly needed, and it's just not ready to deploy yet.
And just in our last half a minute, is there focus on addiction treatment so that users of whatever kind of drug don't get exposed to their product adulterated with fentanyl?
Yeah, I mean, some of these things are controversial. Fentanyl test strips, some universities have started to give them out so that that the students who are thinking of experimenting with drugs or using drugs would be able to test them, to swab them, to make sure that they don't contain illegal fentanyl, because as we know, that's been one of the drivers of these overdose deaths, is that someone thinks they're buying a Xanax or an Adderall or using cocaine, and they're, these things are laced with fentanyl, and then the person dies because they have no opioid tolerance. So test strips, treatment, I think there are a number of experimental, treatments out there, and generally just a real desperation to try anything that might work.
Nick, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
Thank you. Thanks for having me on.
That's Nick Miroff, Washington Post reporter covering the Department of Homeland Security. We talked with him about an ongoing series on the fentanyl crisis. We have a link to that series at WPR.org/Central Time.